Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. This episode of Fat Mascara is sponsored by BetterHelp. Listen, we all carry around different stressors, big and small. Therapy is a safe space to get those things off your chest. Plus, it can help you develop coping skills that make your life easier. I will give you an example. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me say it to Jess or to a guest, reframe. Well, I learned that technique from a therapist. Here's an example. Now that I'm a freelance writer and podcaster, I get lonely working from home and I feel like I'm never going to get to collaborate on projects again. And that's the truth. Reframe, I get to choose which projects I work on, so I'm in control of what I work on, and if I want to collaborate more with others, I don't have to ask anyone's permission. I can just do it. See what I did there? That's reframing. If you've been thinking about starting therapy or are looking for someone to help you process things and give you coping skills, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/mascara today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/mascara. Again, betterhelp.com/mascara.
Welcome, welcome. It's Fat Mascara time. I'm Jess.
I'm Jen. We're back.
We're back. It's so nice to be back in the
groove. We had a little time off.
You feeling
refreshed?
We'll
talk about that. Yes, I'm feeling refreshed. Okay. Let's talk about that next week when it's just you and me.
You and me.
I don't want to take away time from Terry's interview to be talking about us.
Okay.
I want to talk about Terry.
We'll catch up later. Let's catch up later. Let's talk about Terry. I'm so happy she's here. This is a major guest.
Major. This was a really great interview. She's a makeup artist, first of all, Terry Bryant. She's the founder of Guide Beauty, which we have talked about on the podcast. Probably, I was trying to think about this when it first came up, maybe, but we talked about it before, but she brought on Selma Blair as the chief creative officer of Guide Beauty, and it made a lot of noise in the industry, but Terry herself is such a powerhouse. We'll share the story of how losing her dexterity because of Parkinson's disease inspired her to create this brand. And like I said, now she and Selma Blair, who revealed her diagnosis of multiple sclerosis in 2018, are working to change the game in the beauty industry and developing a culture of broader inclusion through universal design, which like I thought I knew what it was, but she does such a good job of explaining it and educating. She is like a teacher's teacher kind of person. And this is a really great interview. So we hope you love Terry as much as we do. And here is Terry Bryant.
So Terry, how did you get interested in beauty and, you know, tell us about your start as a makeup artist?
Sure. So I guess I should credit my mom. Probably a lot of makeup artists do, because she used to bring me to the makeup counter with her when I was a little girl. You know, back in the day when there were only the legacy brands and you only got to see a collection four times a year. And so we would go to the mm-hmm. Chanel counter and we would visit Cesar. And Cesar four times a year, spring, summer, fall, winter, would like sort of just, you know, celebrate my mom, and we would leave the department store and I would play in makeup. And I just loved the whole experience. And I think, you know, kind of was a smitten kitten from day one.
I love that, smitten kitten. So you left the store as a smitten kitten with all your mom's products, four seasons a year. And then what drove you to want to become a makeup artist?
I mean, I played with her makeup for hours on end. I mean, she told me not to, and I said I wouldn't. And then obviously I did. I was an awkward kid, and then I realized I'm actually just still an awkward adult. I just don't care anymore. But as a kid, I sort of didn't quite know how to connect with people. So I would sit by myself for hours and play with makeup. It was just my form of artistry, right? Like, instead of a canvas where you can only paint it once, and, you know, now I got to get a new canvas if it's acrylics or water paints, you know, my canvas was my face. So it lent itself to playing for hours. I could create a look, I could wash it off, I could go, you know, do the process over and over again. And I loved it. And that was sort of my little creative outlet and my little safe space. And two things kind of happened for me in that process. One is, as an awkward kid, part of the reason I was awkward is because I wasn't very confident and I wanted to be a lot of things I wasn't. And in the process of sort of playing with makeup, every time I would create something, whether it was like, I'm going to make my eyes look big and winged, I'm going to create these chiseled cheeks, I'm going to do like all whatever look I was creating or whatever feature I was celebrating, there was kind of this sort of understanding that started to sort of emerge, which is, well, if I love the look I'm creating, I should really love the canvas I'm creating it on. And so it was such a positive, empowering experience. I was like, oh, I want to share that. And then people started to sit in my chair and I started to do makeup. And I think most makeup artists would sort of tell you they'd be hard-pressed to find somebody you kind of couldn't connect with when somebody's in your makeup chair. So I learned how to connect with people. So I sort of had two moments. One, which was, I was so thrilled that I was connecting, but also I was so passionate about what I was doing. And when people kept saying, I wish I could do this for myself, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to get into makeup artistry. I know how to do this. I understand the mechanics. I'm going to show you. And so I kind of just knew that that was going to be my path.
I love that. What were some of your favorite jobs as a makeup artist, or like, you know, like just most memorable jobs, even if it wasn't your favorite?
It's a good way to put it. You know, I kind of feel like it's hard to only pick one, because everyone sort of had its purpose and had its moment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like my first job was behind a Chanel counter. One is because I knew I couldn't afford the makeup without working behind the counter. So I did that. But, you know, I got the job also because that makeup artist, Cesar, who used to celebrate my mom four times a year, he helped me get my first job when I got to college working behind the counter. So that was an incredible experience. Christian Dior gave me the best mentor I've ever had in my life. Smashbox gave me the best friendships I've ever had in my life and community. And they also allowed me to sort of do both my loves in a way that I couldn't do in most makeup companies, right? Because they had the studio setting so I could continue with artistry and develop the education program. So, you know, all of them sort of had their purpose and meaning, I think, and created who I am today.
You said, you're using this word that I find really nice. You said, like, this makeup artist, Cesar, celebrated your mom four times a year. Is that the word you're using?
It is. I feel passionate that that is what, I mean, there's two forms of artistry, right? Well, there's probably more, but I kind of always look at makeup artistry in two ways. One is sort of celebratory and one's transformation. And transformation, which I understand that transformation could be a transformation in how you see yourself, but in terms of the actual techniques you use, I feel like transformation is very often this sort of let's play. It's this world of pretend. I want it, you know, it's costume. It's make-believe land, right? Like sort of creating something that you're not. But celebration is sort of looking at somebody's features and saying, let's celebrate them. I want them to stand out. I want to make it about you, and I want you to see the beauty that's there in a way that you may not have otherwise. So I just feel like that's, I don't know, it's just my favorite form of makeup artistry. And I think that that's what most of us want out of our makeup on most days. And it lifts you. It's kind of, again, it's the sort of, it's how we put ourselves together. It's how we walk out into the world. And I think sometimes people who haven't had the joy of being able to work in artistry that way or makeup artistry that way don't realize what it can do when you just sort of just do a little something to make your eyes just sort of sing and you're like, oh, yeah, I do feel a little better about myself today. So I think celebratory makeup is it's just the way that I'd love most people to experience the world of makeup.
You were lucky enough, I think lucky, to have this education part of your career. You worked with brands where people come in, they want to be either transformed or celebrated, but they want to know how. So they need your help to know how, that whole education aspect of it. Would you hear in your career like similar questions over and over again as far as education? Like, are we not doing something well? I'm sure you were doing it well, but like, what do people keep asking?
Oh, no, I don't think I was doing it well. I think I was doing it maybe well enough. No, I mean, I was really passionate about it. I was so sure because for some reason, you know, makeup, you know, it's a skill set. Makeup artistry, like any form of artistry, is a skill set. And for some reason, in a certain sense, it came naturally to me. You still have to hone and build on that skill set. But the basics somehow, I just used to be able to sort of look at your face, figure out how I want to celebrate it, and then my arm and my hand were just this very direct extension of my mind's eye, and I could just sort of make it happen. But I don't think most people have that experience,
no.
Right?
Yes.
And so I just thought, well, if I can do it and I could teach it to you, then you should be able to go home and do the same thing. What I was missing is it's one thing to understand the steps and techniques that it takes to get from point A to point B, but it's very different to go home and then have to execute it. I mean, I used to talk about years ago, we had this, do you remember Bob Ross?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Okay, so big hair. So we had a Bob
Happy Trees.
Happy Trees, yeah. Yes. Okay, so I can't create happy trees. I create sad little pathetic bushes. I cannot do it. And Bob Ross was brilliant at telling you that, like, you use this brush, this is the color, this is the technique, you stipple here, you dot here. And I was like, I get what you're saying. I think I'm doing it, but my photo picture doesn't look like your painting, right? My painting and your painting look nothing alike. I just couldn't execute, even though I understood what he was saying. And I think that makeup artistry is the same. You know, there's just certain techniques that are inherently more challenging to do. And I think we have made people feel like they should just pick up the brush, whatever it is in their hand, and just make it happen. And that's not how it works.
That's a really good point. You said that you thought of your hand as like this extension of your mind, which is fascinating because I think a lot of people don't have that skill set. But I also know it's a big part of your story. And then that changed for you as you had your career when your hands kind of weren't doing what your mind wanted anymore. Can you tell us about that story?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I always think there's probably moments that happened before this, but I have a very distinct memory that, you know, I was on set. I was doing makeup for somebody who had, it was a look, it was like fresh, clean, pretty, super simple look you could knock out in 20 minutes, you know.
You could knock out in 20 minutes, right, but so, yes, go on.
Okay, so I could knock out. At the time, I could knock out. And it was with a model I'd worked with before and a crew I'd worked with before. And so should have been easy breezy. And like 20 minutes passed, 30 minutes, I'm now heading into 40 minutes. And I just kept thinking, something feels odd here. Like I just couldn't do it quite right. Like I didn't have the same level of precision. I just kept saying, at first in my head, like there just felt like a little disconnect. And at some point, I knew it was coming eventually, the model, and in a nice way, was like, girl, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, why? I'm like, I don't know. But I got through the day, we wrapped it up, it was all fine. And I thought, well, all right, that was terrible, but let's ignore that. And I did for a while, but that little, what I just kept describing as a disconnect, which was just enough of a disconnect that it was making me hard to execute on the level of a professional makeup artist, started to just progress and progress and progress. And I started to find myself sort of pivoting a little in my career. Like if you called me for Fashion Week, I'd be like, oh no, I'm not doing that. Because I sort of, without knowing what was going on, I thought it's going to be fast paced. I'm going to have to knock out a lot of looks real quick. But maybe if it's a one day shoot, a simple look, I'll take that one. And I started doing more education. And I just was sort of changing my career path a little bit, not knowing what was happening. You know, over the years, other symptoms started to show. So the disconnect in my hand all of a sudden started to present as like stiffness and pain in my shoulders, and all these weird things were happening. And I was going to doctors over the years, and they're like, well, you're just getting older. And I was like, well, that's a terrible thing to say to me, but okay. And so you keep thinking something's wrong, but you almost want to take somebody's at their word when they say there's nothing wrong with you. Just, you know, drink more water, have some vitamins, don't have cocktail hour, none of those things I was going to do, right? So like none of it, but it progressed. At some point it progressed far enough that I was like, this is insane. Like there has to be an answer. And, you know, long story shorter, at some point I finally got in front of the right person who recognized probably within 2 minutes of meeting me that I had Parkinson's and said, I can't confirm it, but I'm almost positive. And I said, well, this is a neurologist. I said, if you were a betting man, 1 to 10, how sure are you? He said, I'll give it a 9. I was like, oh, well, that's pretty stinking sure. I'm going to go, let's go with Parkinson's. And obviously you go through all the steps and you take all the tests. And, you know, obviously it was confirmed that that was the issue. And I was always a left-handed makeup artist, and that's where my symptoms were presenting. And, you know, for so long, I didn't know what was going on that at least at that point, I was like, all right, well, at least I'm not nuts. At least I know what's happening now, and maybe I can solve for it.
Yeah, it's funny. I was going to ask you if you experienced like an ableism as you, in your career as a makeup artist, or dismissiveness because of your skill set changing as a makeup artist. But hold on, we got to go back to the medical community's ableism and dismissiveness. Like, before we get into that, like, how many years are we talking about where, like, you know what's you know something's different, but they're not hearing you?
I mean, it was a slow progression. My sort of symptoms still are fairly slow, but I'm going to say, sort of light dipping my toes in the water, asking if something was wrong, was probably 10 years before I got a diagnosis. And then...
Yeah. So 10 years of like doctor hopping and 10 years of...
Yeah, 5 years of like, of going to people saying, real experts would say things like, you know, you're just not in great, good enough shape and you should go stretch more and you should exercise. And I was like, all right, I'll try all these things. But yeah, it was a long time. I think people can be very quickly dismissive. I wasn't, not that young onset Parkinson's doesn't happen, but I didn't match the demo for them. They expected me to be older. They expected the shaky hand, which at that time I didn't have any of that. I just kept saying, there's a disconnect in my hand. I feel like my fingers aren't moving sort of independently of each other the way they used to. I can't perform makeup artistry with the same precision. Those are big for me. And they're like, those don't sound like anything, right? They didn't identify those as being big enough issues to really pursue. And then when I started getting pain in my shoulders, I was like, you got to listen to that. This is pain. I'm in pain. They're like, well, again, that's just because you probably need a chiropractor. You probably need a physical therapist. You probably need to exercise more. So they just weren't hearing it. And so I think it happens a lot.
I feel like I'm guilty of that too. As you're talking about like what Parkinson's looked like or whatever, I'm thinking, what does a makeup artist look like? Would I picture someone who's starting a beauty brand and being a makeup artist to be someone who has Parkinson's? Probably my brain wouldn't have gone there. And here you are like defying my stereotype and my expectation, which is pretty cool. It's good to remember that like people do that all the time and you're one of them. So you're dealing with a big health condition, but you're still working. Did you experience like changes to your career because of this?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I certainly was, my career was shifting for a long time, right? Like I had been running parallel paths in my career. I was doing the makeup artistry and the education. So I was like leaning more into the education, but then I was also going on like QVC and HSN. And by the time I got my diagnosis, I mean, I found myself kind of trying to play the game a little bit, thinking if anybody finds out, I'm not going to have a job anymore. Who's going to hire the makeup artist with Parkinson's, right? Like, so I say things like, it's cold in here today.
But I think that's important for you to like explain a little bit more. Like you said, who's going to hire the makeup artist with Parkinson's? Like, yeah, there's the obvious like things that you're suggesting, but I'd love you to like explain that a little bit more. What were you afraid of?
I was afraid that the moment that I shared, well, certainly for what I was doing, like at that point, I was doing also a lot of on-air work. I was presenting for brands on broadcast retail. And so even though I could pull it off at that time, I think my thought was the minute they know, I'm not a long-term plan for them because they're going to think that, you know, it could be tomorrow that she can't hold a brush in her hand. She can't get the eyeliner on the model's face. So I'm not a good investment for a company at that point. And so I was scared to say anything, especially when I didn't know what was going on. But then once I did know what was going on, I was like, all right, well, yeah, I don't know which one, in some ways, which one's worse, which one's better. The good part about getting the diagnosis is I felt like I had an opportunity to take control over it. Yeah. You know, I mean, I always say that Guy Beauty in a way was born the day I got my diagnosis. Like I almost ran home with tunnel vision thinking, well, you know, now I know what's going on. Maybe I can actually solve for this because I now know more about Parkinson's than I ever thought I was going to know in my lifetime. And it's, you know, people know what they're exposed to. And, you know, I think we see examples which happen, but everybody's sort of journey is different. We're all more or less able throughout our lives in many different ways. And I just was like, I'm just going to work in the moment. I know where I'm at today. So let me see if I can solve for what's happening today. And I started to work on prototypes to keep myself in the game.
And really, like, what was that gap of time between your diagnosis and Guide Beauty and thinking about the line?
Yeah. So, I mean, it started in some ways a little bit selfishly. Like, I came home from that doctor's appointment. I was like, all right, pulled out my makeup kit. I pulled out my husband's toolkit. And I was like, I understand the mechanics of good artistry. I sort of, like, I felt at the time, certainly, the biggest things for me was I just intuitively understood that grip was becoming an issue. Stability was becoming an issue. So I thought, well, maybe I could start building these things into the tools. So I was breaking things apart, rebuilding. Mm-hmm. At some point, I had, at the time, it looked like a little finger puppet, and it had one of those little mascara balls on it, and I was resting it against my cheek and kind of blinking into it. And I looked at my husband. I was like, oh, honey, look at this. Like, this is so easy. Like, this is crazy easy. Not only is this easy for me now, but wouldn't this be like great if I had had this for all the thousands of people who sat in my makeup chair and said, makeup isn't easy for me. And oh shit, then you get this light bulb moment of now I'm excited. Like now, obviously not the best news in the world, right? To get a health diagnosis like Parkinson's, but like now all of a sudden it's like maybe something brilliant and beautiful is born in this moment. Now it's beyond me. Did I just sort of figure out something I could never have figured out before? Like I always thought I could teach somebody how to apply makeup because I was an expert. I never knew what it felt like not to be the expert. So I found myself in this unique white space, right? What if I could start thinking through that lens?
That's interesting.
Right? And then, so at that point, I worked for about 6 months on my own creating prototypes. And then the game changers, we actually partnered up with a design team that specializes in human factors engineering and inclusive and universal design. And that was the game changer. Like at that moment, I was all in.
Hey everyone, it's Jen, and I have decided this is going to be the summer of uniform dressing. I'm going to have a few pieces on heavy rotation, and I'm telling you right now, they're all going to be linen, and they're all going to be from Quince. I don't know why I'm going so hard on linen right now, but it just feels right. And Quince specializes in timeless pieces made of premium fabric, and the best part is that all the Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. I am personally very into the 100% European linen pants. They're cropped and easy. There's even a cute pinstriped version. And when I wear them, I look like I just stepped off a yacht. Do I have a yacht? No. Do I know what yachters wear? No, but that's the vibe. The linen pants come in sizes extra small to 3X, and they're less than $40. Okay, like 10 cents less. They're $39.90. But the quality is excellent, and they wash really well. How does Quince do it? They cut out the cost of the middleman and pass the savings on to us. Plus, Quince works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/fatmascara for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com, Q-U-I-N-C-E, quince.com/fatmascara to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/fatmascara. Summer is fast approaching, which means it's shapewear season. Just kidding. It's really wedding season. But I just got an invitation to a wedding in Philadelphia, and guess what I'll be wearing? Honey Love. I'm not sure about the rest of the outfit or the dress, but the shapewear is going to be Honey Love. Here's why. Honey Love has revolutionized compression technology so you no longer have to feel like you're suffocating when you're wearing shapewear. Plus, they have lingerie-inspired design details that you'll want to show off, and all their fabrics are breathable to keep you nice and cool, which is perfect for hot days. Let me tell you a story. I remember being at a wedding, this was a few years ago, pre-Honey Love, and I wore a jumpsuit, and I wasn't sure if the bathroom door locked well, but I had to take off the entire jumpsuit and then roll down the shapewear to pee, and I was like holding onto the back of the door at the same time, completely naked in the bathroom, and it took so long, and I caused this whole backup of the bathroom line, and after that, I was like, never again. Until Honey Love came along. Honey Love's superpower shorts have a 100% cotton gusset so you don't have to wear underwear underneath. And there's a convenient opening in the underwear area so you don't have to take off the whole thing to go to the bathroom. It's so easy. Honey Love products make you look good and feel good. Whether it's for a wedding, event, an everyday boost of confidence, Honey Love is the perfect plus one. Treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/mascara. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off. That's honeylove.com/mascara. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. honeylove.com/mascara for 20% off. The summer vibes are just getting started, so shape your life with Honey Love.
Okay, everyone, I am one of those people who, when it comes to wellness, sorry, but it's got to fit into the pockets of my day. 5 minutes here, 7 minutes there, when I'm like in the kitchen and I'm microwaving something long. It's got to be convenient. And that is why Alo Moves works for me. My mindset has changed. The app makes it easy for me to keep my wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place and bite-sized little bits. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, self-care tips, healthy recipes, so much more. From beginner to advanced, Alo Moves has the flow or class that's going to fit into your schedule. Their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour, depending on what you're feeling that day.
You know what feeling I'm feeling most days? I'm feeling 10 minutes. I've been doing Joanna Thompson's. Right? That's about it.
Yeah, that's good.
10 minutes. Joanna Thompson does these yoga lattes in 10. One day will be abs. One day will be arms. Today, Jess, is booty day. And we're just going to get it done all in 10 minutes. If you're trying to get a good sweat, then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like the sweat-inducing yoga flows or the reformer Pilates workouts without weights. You can also find stress relief with meditations, affirmations, face yoga, gua sha, learn to do dry brushing. How many times have we talked about dry brushing on this podcast? Alo Moves will teach you how to do it.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Alo Moves. Go to alomoves.com now and use the code MASCARA20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership. That's alomoves.com, code MASCARA20. alomoves.com, code MASCARA20. Are there any products that you feel are just not user-friendly or ergonomic at base level, but certainly for somebody who might be like the Guide Beauty user? Because I'm looking at them like I'm with fresh eyes and I'm like, they're all just sticks.
No, on an eyelash curler, you put like someone who doesn't know makeup, they think it's a torture device.
Oh yeah. I don't like it. If a makeup artist, I mean, not that I'm in a makeup chair every so often, like I'm not, but like if I'm in a makeup chair and someone's doing my makeup for like an event or something, and they have an eyelash curler, I'm like, yo, bro, I'll do it. Because it's like, it's scary.
It is scary. We're like, if you think about it, like here's, whether it's a lash curler or putting on false lashes or getting tweezed or like coming in with liner, like here's this sharp pencil. I'd like you to come really close into your eye and draw with precision. Don't poke yourself. Like, and the truth is, most tools are not built with any kind of stability in mind or grip or stability. So we're coming in freehand. We approach makeup artistry like we're in development. A lot of ways we approach all other types of artistry. And so anytime you're free-handed, you're vulnerable. So, you know, if we can build those design elements and those human factors needs into products, then it makes it easier. So I would say most things are not designed with a level of ease and access that not only would allow people who have never been invited into the beauty space before to be here, but also make it easier for those who are already here. Because the truth is, when you are fully able-bodied, you will make do with designs that are less than, because you'll figure out ways to manipulate and work around it. I mean, think about the next time you do make your makeup or you watch somebody do their makeup, we're always looking to accommodate for flaws or what's lacking in a design. You know, we're always resting and grounding and trying to find ways to get our hands steady on our face, because again, not everything's easy. So if we could, as much as possible, build those things in, again, you know, it becomes a smarter design process, factoring for everybody, and you get better product, better processes.
Absolutely.
You use the word universal design, which I see often with like capital letters. What is that?
Yeah. So I probably put it in capital letters everywhere because I love it. I had no idea what it was until I started the development process and working with our design team. But, you know, inclusive and universal design, I mean, they're sort of sisters. They're slightly different design processes, but, you know, the outcome is accessibility. But at the core, universal design says it's when you factor in for the greatest needs, when you bring, you know, cast the widest net possible, bring everybody to the table in your design process. Again, not only do you create products that allow access to somebody who didn't have it before, but you create better processes for the whole and products for the whole. So there are lots of universally designed products out there that we use every day that we don't even realize outside of the makeup industry. So for example, like the remote control for your television. So the remote control for the television, which is kind of more of a, on the inclusive side, was first created for people who had mobility issues, who couldn't physically walk across the room to turn their TV off and on, right?
Wow.
Yeah. But if you, right?
No, so, I didn't know that. But
I didn't think about that. I'm ashamed. Yeah.
But it's mind blowing, because if you think about it, like I mean, I was laughing with my brother because when we were kids, we didn't have remote controls for our television. And now if you gave me a TV without a remote control, I don't even know how to turn the thing on. Like, I don't even know where the button is. Like, it just, it's become expected. It's so much easier for all of us. But as kids, yeah, we used to take turns who had to change the channel or turn the volume up in town. And then eventually we got so lazy, like we'd grab like rocks and like balls and try to throw it against the TV to see if we could hit the button. And like, that's how, I mean, it was only like 2 feet away from us, but that's how lazy we were. But like, now we're like, oh, this is awesome. Like, if somebody said, get up and turn the TV off and on, you'd be like, oh, screw yourself. I don't have to click, click, but nope, you don't bother always making those changes until you sort of seek out exclusion, solve for it. And when you do that, it becomes more, it's just brilliant. It's like, oh, great, this is the right thing to do. Shouldn't we all be able to use one product the same way? But just made everybody's life better. And there's so many products out there that we just don't even realize are designed through that lens. I'd like our, you know, I'd like the makeup industry to start doing the same.
Do you think most of those products do have a story of someone with a disability that they were solving for, like a remote control, like when it gets better for all of us, there was that story in the beginning?
A lot of times, there's a lot of those, but that even happens, I mean, as a makeup artist, sort of when you know, back in the day, when you know, you would sort of fight for a larger shade range and people would say, well, you know, that's a nice thing to do, but that customer isn't there. You know who I want to buy my, you know, I'm very pale, but I want to buy foundation from somebody, a company that knows how to create foundation for every skin tone, because I know they're going to nail it, right? Like, that becomes a better product. But yeah, I think a lot of times it's sort of the core of inclusive and universal design is that you want to value life experiences outside of your own, factor in for them. They're important. They're not only important because that's how you create better, more loving communities and a better world in general, but from a design and business perspective, that's actually how you create better products. And so you won't even know to think about it. You don't know that something could be better until somebody shows you why it doesn't work for them. And so, you know, there's like Nike did this great shoe and there's this one-handed zipper out there that cyclists are using that was created for a gentleman who only had one arm. And like, there's just even the bendable straw is a story created for somebody who couldn't work with a non-bendable straw. I don't know if you've ever heard this story, but it's super cute. August De Los Reyes is one of my sort of design, like, I just think he's a hero in the inclusive and universal design space, but he does a great TED talk. And he talks about how inclusive and universal design are love stories. And he tells about the story about this father who goes to the soda fountain with his little girl in San Francisco. And they go sit at the soda fountain and they order their shakes. And she gets her milkshake and it comes with this, you know, big glass, big straw, tiny girl, high counter, high stool. And she's like, yeah, I can't reach that. Like, that's not happening. And he's looking at her. He's like, huh, really ruined daddy-daughter day. So he went home and he took the straw and he put a screw inside the straw, bent it, wrapped it with dental floss, pulled the screw out and created the first bendable straw with the thought that the next time he goes to the soda fountain with his daughter, she's going to be able to reach the top of her straw
and drink,
right? So cute. But, but such a small design element that he saw exclusion. He cared and loved for this person. He solved for it. And then even today, I mean, not that straws are something great to use because they're not always the most sustainable earth-friendly products, but you know, when you go to hospitals, and patients need to take their pills in a hospital bed, bendable straw. When you're lying in your beach chair and vacation and you're too lazy and you just want to lie there with your pina colada, bendable straw, right? Like, I think that's the concept about universal design is that there's this common thread that makes it better for everybody.
I want you to tell us more. Ooh, there's so many. Let's get to your line.
Right.
Their way in. We might soon, like, everybody, like, yeah, that's how you always put on eyeliner. They didn't know before that we had pointy brushes that were.
Yeah. Right. Could you know?
Could you? Right. Again, I'm going to look at the mascaras today and be like, oh my God, that was so messed up.
Really?
Just disgusting.
Yeah. Tell us about some of the things that you've created.
Yeah. So, I mean, I knew when we were starting that obviously over the years of working in makeup artistry that there are certain techniques that create definition that are like probably the most important, right? So, because creating definition is, you know, but they're more natural. Those are the techniques that sort of create the most impact. You do less, but they're always harder. So it's, you know, eyeliner, mascara, brow. Those all take fine motor skills and precision and application, which even surgeons don't have surgeon level skill, right? Hands, right? Like we talk about surgeon level hands and skills, but there's sort of robots that do that now because everybody has at least a little shake. So what we realized is, again, through this universal design process, and which took about 2.5 years of development with over 200 test users, what we did is we pulled in, and I'll sort of walk you, sort of to get there, I'll walk you through how the whole process works because it's really great. So you pull in test users across all skill sets and abilities. So we brought in professionals, makeup artists, novices, people with MS, Parkinson's, arthritis, people said, I'm pretty decent with makeup, I don't have a lot of time. People who just said, I'm just learning, like, you name it, come into the room. And then we just said, let's watch a play. So you watch people play with traditional tools, pencils, liners, brushes, whatever, and you just watch and see where the sticking points hit. And those are your moments of gold. When you watch and see where somebody struggles, you're like, ah, now I see it, right? Like, let's see if we can solve for it. You solve for it, you bring them back in again, and you just do it over and over and over again till as many people in that room start to find it easier. And now you know you're onto something. And what we kept seeing time and time again is people were struggling because they're coming in free-handed. They don't have any, like, when you lock your hand around a pencil, a traditional pencil or a brush, I don't know if you play golf, I don't, but I'm just going to use the analogy anyways. But they always say, if you want a nice fluid swing, don't have a tight grip. And it's the same with makeup artistry. Anything that's sort of a small cylinder, which as you sort of, you know, you recognize sticks, right? Like sticks, they're sticks. You sort of, you lock on tight and then you lose a great level of ease and fluidity and motion all the way up the arm. So it doesn't make it as easy to apply as it should. The minute you can open up the hand and soften the hand, you're going to have an easier time applying. But then there's also no way to ground and steady. So if you think about eyeliner in general, there's like a few forms, but let's just go with the ones that most people would say pencils are probably the easiest, right? At least traditionally. The challenge is you're never going to get the same level of precision that you might like because inherently the minute you touch your eye, you dull the tip, right? And so it's impossible to like it would take you 12 years to sharpen the tip, you know, do a little dot and dot it across your eye. It just doesn't make sense. So that's why liquid liner is so popular. You get the precision. Liquid liner is a disaster. It's really hard to do. So we thought, well, what if we could get the precision of the liquid with the ease of the pencil, but then one up it and create a level of stability and control and application that would help guide your hand and allow you to actually to steady your hand and guide your hand so that you can drop the tool against your face before you even start applying. Because that's the other thing. If you go to apply your liner with a traditional sort of pencil or brush or liquid, then you have to start applying first. And so if you land in the wrong spot, you're screwed, right? Like you land too high, too low. You're committed. You're committed to your brush, right? It's terrible. You're like, and I just started too high. Now I was going to do a tight line. We're going with a wing tick, right? Like it just, you're all in. Wherever you are.
Are you in my bathroom?
I've seen it 100 times. Yeah, I mean, it happens to all of us. And even for makeup artists, most makeup artists will tell you that it's easier to apply to somebody else than to yourself. You lose a great level of perception when you look in a mirror. It's almost impossible to do makeup as well on yourself as it is on somebody else. But so this way with like the guide wand, now you can ground steady. You can find your footing. You're like, oh, I can see exactly where I need this to drop before I even start touching my eye and then work from the right point. So whether it's a thin line or a thick line, you've got control before you start. And that, and so your starting point ends you at the right finishing point. I don't know if that makes sense. It's probably hard.
No, it does.
Yes. This is clearly why you're
hence
in education.
Guide.
You've got a guide.
You got a guide, hence guide, exactly.
What do you call your tool that you invented for eyeliner?
So for eyeliner, it's the guide wand. It's an elongated handle, and you hold it, instead of holding it sort of horizontally, you hold it vertically, so your arm is closer to the base. It has resting points for your fingers. It has resting points for your cheek. It has a soft, flexible applicator tip that has a window so that you can see, so that you're not blocking your view. The soft, flexible applicator tip is more comfortable. It allows you to tight line. You can even get under the lash base super easy. So if you ever want to get that invisible liner, nothing's easier when it comes to invisible liner than the guide wand. And I normally don't toot my own horn, but I got to tell you,
I think I need that. It's brilliant.
The first time
I watched a video, I was like, these people look like they're having fun. Like, you know,
you.
Of someone using your
that.
The guide wand. Because it didn't look painful and torturous. It just looked like, oh, natural.
I mean, that is obviously, you know, at the very core and heart of it all. Like the idea that somebody would not enter the beauty space because they were intimidated or it just didn't feel fun or joyful. it was like heartbreaking to me. So the idea that somebody could come in the space and know that they were thought of, included, and then get there and have fun while they're doing it. And a lot of this is also taking a little pressure off yourself. Anytime you do anything new, there's going to be a learning curve, right? Like, it's the reason I didn't get into hair, I got into makeup. Like, once you cut somebody's hair off, you know, like, what am I going to do? See in another 6 months before I can fix it? But makeup, just wash it off, start again, build your confidence.
We heard that from a facialist recently. He was like, I had to stop doing hair because you could really screw someone up.
That was so funny.
During lockdown, I took out my mom's hair. It was not a pretty picture. She didn't talk to me for several weeks. So,
oh God.
It was not good. I was like, I can figure it out. I couldn't figure it out.
Stick to the makeup.
Yeah.
What other industries do you think could benefit from, like, the guide treatment?
You know, I the truth is every industry and every human.
That's probably a silly question. Of course. Nothing's like, we've got this. Yeah, the world needs to be more inclusive.
Yeah, no, it's not a silly question. The thing is that it also takes a shift in perception, right? Because I think what has happened in our industry and most industries is this sort of strange, and I'll just speak to the beauty industry because it's the one I know the most, right? Is that, like, for so long, people have assumed that it's like an us and them moment. We're either creating for some sort of perceived norm who the industry has defined as the customer, or which is limited and odd, or everybody else. So I'm creating for you, who I just have determined is everybody, you know, the core and who's going to shop, and everybody else will create something different. And universal design in this perspective says, cut it out, right? Like, we're not designing for us and them. We're just designing for we. Just include everybody together. It makes for better product and better process. It's kind of mind-blowing that it's taken so long for us to start getting there. But I do see, you know, industries and people starting to see it. But we, you know, again, you know, I wasn't part of the solution for a long time myself, right? Because I didn't know any better. So,
well, it's funny you say, like, beauty companies say, like, the customer. And to every brand, the customer is probably something different. You know, just in my experience, I feel like every brand has their own, like, vision of who their customer, you know, their customer is, and their own, like, idealized vision. But every brand, like, there's not one brand who isn't talking about inclusivity.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I just going back to the customer. I mean, I certainly remember over the years being in rooms where, as a company, you had to define who your customer was, like, down to one single human being. Her name is Emily. She drives a BMW, but it's not the high end. It's the entry series. She's going to work in PR. She's working her way up the ladder. But right now, like, she likes to go out on Wednesday nights with her girls and watch what it, like, and then every decision you made in life, whatever department you worked in, you're like, what would Emily think?
I'm
like,
so funny.
What the fuck is Emily?
Just us too. We know,
right?
I know. I'm laughing because that's what I'm saying. Like, they all have this very specific vision of their customer, but they all want to be inclusive. But inclusivity is, in my experience, it's very vague. It's very vague. They're very specific about the customer, but they're vague as hell with inclusivity.
Yeah, and
not every brand. I'm being a little mean. Sorry. I feel like
And the truth is, I think that most people have good intentions. It's probably, you know, easier because I started off at, you know, I jumped off at this stage, right? A lot of companies are already existing and beautiful and have done wonderful things, and now trying to figure out how to sort of change and figure out how to make this happen. You know, for us, inclusivity is, it's a design process, right? Like, it's a method to create accessibility. I mean, that's what inclusive design is, right? Like, it's inclusive and universal design. It is a method, and at the end of the day, the outcome is accessibility, and that's what we want. And so it just means, again, look around you. Like, in the process, actually, I'm a little all over the place, but in the process, you know, people always said, like, how did you know your customer was, like, who's your customer? I've been in the meetings too, like, tell us who your customer is. I'm like, I'm not defining a customer, I'm defining a community. I don't have to tell you who the customer is because they actually were part of our development process. I knew from day one, you always know if you hit it right because your community is building your products. It makes your life a lot happier, a lot easier than trying to create something and then convincing who you think is your target to come on board. It's just, you know, it takes a step back, and it does take a change in thinking, and it takes time, and it takes money. So, I mean, in all fairness, it's a process. But I also think part of that process is a change in narrative and perspective, that people have to understand we have to close that gap and stop with the us and them development. Like it's either I'm either creating for able-bodied or I'm either creating for this sector and or I'm creating for somebody else. Like just start shifting that thought process and it'll come together.
Did they ever, when I say they, I guess just mean like people who you've had to try to convince, whether it's to like get money or retailers or whoever it is, like, are they having trouble believing or are they questioning whether or not the customer like exists? Or is it like, we just don't understand who this is for?
Yeah, I think it's funny, I always talk about how, you know, for 2.5, 3 years of development, if you would ask me if I knew what I was doing was the right thing, I always said, hells yeah, no, 100%, no issues. And then my husband and I were on the plane flying to New York for DeskSides like 2 weeks before COVID hit to launch the brand. Mm-hmm. And on the plane, I looked at him after all that time and I was like, what if they hate us? What if they don't like us? He was like, really now? I think we're a little late for that now, but like, all right, well, I'm having a moment. Because you do realize that change is hard for people. I walked away excited because I knew our community had helped us build the product. I knew that the community was on board. I didn't know if the industry was going to grab on so quickly. I think the only, at the initial sort of moment that I think is understandable is, I think kudos to the industry, and I'm like so grateful that so many people stepped up and said, we're going to tell your story. We're going to talk about it. We want to help this sort of moment grow. We want people to understand that it's available and the value of it. So I was thrilled because people were just truly kind, right? They didn't have to. But there's also a learning curve, which is, I think it's easy to land in sort of old school thought processes, which is, I think one of the first, you know, few articles that came out was disabled makeup artist creates products for people with Parkinson's. And I was like, oh, all right, well, I'm not ashamed that I have Parkinson's. I want people to know about it. I want to fight for it. I want a cure, right? Like, I did create products so that people who have Parkinson's like myself can access makeup, but kind of missing the point, right? Like, the
it's
point
not
is,
inclusive either.
Right. Like,
like meta, come on.
Right. And so they were trying to be helpful, but that's, you know, that's kind of what we've all sort of been ingrained to think for so long that it just took a moment to sort of try to get people to understand the approach. And then once they did, I think they were all on board. But you got to give people a minute to get there, which is the other reason that I'm like always hesitant. I never want to shame people or make people afraid to ask the questions or say the wrong thing, because then nobody learns. Nobody gets
totally
better.
If you could rewrite that headline, what's like your dream headline? Like if it's like New York Times cover of the style section, what's the headline?
You know, I think that the message would be somewhere along the lines of makeup artist develops revolutionary, universally designed products that makes makeup artistry better and easier for everyone.
That's the name of this episode, Jen. Let's write it down
now.
No
problem.
So we don't forget.
The whole time you were talking, I was thinking, yes, like I can see a world 10 years from now where we're all like, oh, your eyeliner tool doesn't have a hole in it so you can actually see where the liner's going. What?
Loser.
Like, yeah. Like, we're not shaming Jess.
Although that was funny.
you're like waking people up to like, oh yeah, design needs to be inclusive.
Or even like, I think about the beauty blender as like a tool that like was probably really weird when people first saw it. Like, and now it's just like everybody copies it and makes their own version of it. Like you're going to have copycats, Terry. I hope you know
that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know they say, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. And certainly I would love to see the industry start, you know, designing from this perspective. I'd like them not to copy my exact patented tool and put my name on it as if it's theirs, but which, you know, obviously does happen. And like Beauty Blender, though, is a brilliant, brilliant product, right? Like she changed the game. That it makes foundation application easier. The way that I think Temp 2 and their airbrush, their pot airbrush changed the game.
Oh, yeah.
That's not as easy to knock off because that's probably a little more expensive for knockoffs to happen. But, the other thing, though, that does happen in terms of knockoffs is that there's product and then there's community, right? And so I think that you're always going to have people who try to sneak their way in and have their moment and take advantage and not come in from the best intentions. But I think when you're brand is built on community, the right people stand by you. And so I think that keeps you as a brand growing and moving.
Yeah. And they're in your corner. Okay, before we let you go, even though I want to leave on your amazing headline that you just created, aka the title of this podcast episode, we have a Fat Mascara 5 for you, a little speed round of questions we do with all of our guests. These are special for you, though. So if you're up for it, are you ready?
I'm ready. Nothing I do in life is very fast, but I'll give it a go. They call me a turtle, or actually, my spirit animal is actually a tree sloth. So, I'll work. I'll do my best. I'm with you.
Okay, take your time. What's the first beauty product you remember buying?
First beauty product. That's challenging because I basically used to take, you know how you get palettes from Shadow Quads? I used to take the ones that color that my mother didn't use from every palette and create my own. And I started working behind the counter because I couldn't afford it. So I can tell you in the 90s, I bought a lot of Stila lip glaze and a lot of Chanel Vamp nail polish and lipstick.
Yes. Okay. What's the last beauty product you bought? Be very honest.
I just bought about 500 false lashes.
Which brand?
It was a hodgepodge. A lot of them were from Kiss.
Oh, okay. What's the makeup look or beauty trend that you just can't get into that you see out there and you're like, not for me? Oh, you're smiling. She has an answer already, and you better say what just came to mind.
I'm going to say it only because I get asked to write a lot about trends as they come up and my thoughts behind them, and usually I can find a reason or a purpose for all of them, but I have a real hard time getting behind the end of last year when everybody was doing the lube as face primer. Not okay. I can't find one reason to tell somebody to do it. I can't. I'm out on that. Okay.
I hear you. What's the makeup look or trend that will always be in style for you?
For me, I mean, fresh, clean, pretty is always in style. And then a classic red lip is always going to be in style.
Okay. And how do you relax at the end of the day?
Aw, I meet my husband out on the patio with our dog and we grab a cocktail and we just look at the lake and chit chat about our day. Okay.
What are we drinking? What's the cocktail?
I say martinis, but I think they're really actually Gibson's because we use cocktail onions instead of olives. But we call it teeny time. But that's why it can only be one, because if you have two, then teeny time turns into what we call meany time. So you got to keep it down to one.
Teeny time, the dog teeny of you at the lake and your pseudo martini.
Am I the right exactly?
Yeah, no, it's great. This has been honestly super eye-opening for me.
I
kind of rethinking like how a lot of things are designed in my life. And I'm like, yeah, why do we make do with that? Fix it, Terry. / other people. I'm not going to put it all on you. That's the other thing we do, isn't it? Like, we're going to make the person who has the issue solve the problem also. Like, who am I? No. All right.
But that's really true.
It's 100% true. It's 100% true.
You fix it. Yeah, that's terrible.
Teach me about it. Like,
I'm in.
That's so messed up.
No, not at all. I love it. I love it. I'm all in. I mean, obviously not all in on all of it, but I'm all in on most of it. At least in the beauty industry, I'm not done until.
That's where we need you. That's where we need you. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on Fat Mascara.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Raise a Wand product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.